All right, testing 1, 2, 1, 2. You guys got me? All good? All right, we're going to get started with our post-race press conference here at Talladega Super Speedway at the Geico 500 with our race-winning crew chief, Phil Spurgeon. And Phil, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on that win. Take us through those last laps from your seat on the pit box.
Well, it's a speedway race, so you have grown to expect that. With five to go, you can't tell what's going to happen at the end. With two to go, you can't tell what's going to happen at the end. And frankly, coming off of four in the top group of cars, you don't really know what to expect yet. You know that there's going to be a wreck at the start-finish line, and so many times have been on the other end of it. So unlike, downforce races or road course races where you can, you know you have a good car, you know have a bad car, here you don't know what's going to happen. So it's a little bit nerve wracking, but you kind of stay calm. And as it transpires, it's like, man, it becomes more and more clear in those last few seconds that we won the race, and great day for us.
All right. And one additional question before we go to questions out here is based on some of the notes we have, this car that you won with today is the same car you won with in COTA, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, can you tell us a little bit about that, the ability to bring that COTA winning car here to Talladega and win again?
Yeah, it really comes down to just the whole next-gen platform. All the cars are the same and have the same range of adjustments and the same groups of parts. So all the cars right now are essentially universal. So there's, we took that car after it was done at COTA and cleaned it up and set it up a little bit differently to come here and... There's no reason it can't race at a different type of track at an oval next time, downforce oval.
All right, we're going to take questions for Phil. If you have one, raise your hand. We'll get a mic to you, and we're going to start with Jenna Fryer here in the corner. Thank you.
Ross was saying that he just was going to stay there and not move. He didn't want to make a mistake. He didn't want to get in the wrong line. Did you guys talk about that, or did he come to that decision on his own?
In the moment, he comes to that decision on his own. Obviously, leading up to the event, we've talked a lot through a lot of different scenarios, and one word that we always keep, that keeps reoccurring, is patience. You have to be calculated in your moves and have patience, and it's exactly what he did. He executed perfectly.
And two wins. Did you have any idea that you guys had that in you?
I knew that all this group of guys had the potential in them. Whether we were going to get them or not, it's a different story. But after the first win, and really after the consistency in the top five, the instances we haven't finished in the top five, honestly, it's been engine, it's been wrecks, and we've had strong performing cars everywhere. So I have all the confidence in the world in this group, and that we can't continue to run, be a contender every week.
All right. We'll go to Bob up front.
Bob Pockers, Fox Sports. So can you use this car every week?
It would be really difficult to turn it around every week, but, every third or fourth week, with the cleanup and the prep time that goes into it, you could use it every third or fourth week pretty easily.
Do you know, like, is this car, for whatever reason, a better car than the others in your fleet?
No, I would say it's exactly the same. And in fact, there's so many parts on them that are interchangeable. There's likely a different group of parts on this car than there was on the chassis element than there was on the car when it raced at COTA.
All right. Any questions in the press box?
No questions.
Right, no questions in the press box. Any questions downstairs? Okay, we'll go to Dustin and then Jeff. Up front to Dustin, thank you.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Phil, can you give me a sense of, certainly we've seen, and Ross has talked about, he's always been an aggressive driver, but trying to contain or control that in certain situations, and how patience may have played a role, or how it played a role in what he was able to do today, where maybe he wouldn't be able to have done as well at some other point, or how you've seen that kind of evolve in the time together.
Yeah, I've certainly seen a little evolution in my time with Ross. You know, I didn't work with Ross before the start of the 21 season, so you know, likely it was different prior to that. But just from last year to this year, I certainly have seen that evolve a little bit. You know, his patience inside the car has been better. He's just generally calm, and that comes with confidence, and that comes with us providing him, you know, cars that are capable and crews that are capable of working on them and pitting them.
All right, we'll go to Jeff Hood, Daniel McFadden, and then we're going to come up front to Jeff Gluck. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, Phil, congratulations on the win. Jeff Hood of Racing today. I'm amazed, and I've been following the sport a long time, to see these 20-something-year-old drivers just win week after week after week. Just from your time in the sport, are you continued to be surprised about this? And is it the new car? And are you just kind of riding that wave with Ross right now and watching some of these other young drivers get it done each week?
You know, there certainly is an element of the new car this year. It's kind of, you know, mixed things up a little bit, but I'm not surprised to see the younger drivers contending every week. You know, if you look back maybe over the last 20 years, the level of preparation has changed over time. And right now, the guys that are the 20-somethings got into the sport when that level of preparation had elevated itself. So the guys that are 20-somethings right now are doing things a lot differently than the veterans have in the past. And some of the veterans have tried to adapt, but you know, that's an edge that the younger drivers have.
All right, Daniel, go ahead with your question.
Daniel McFadden, FrenchRace.com. When the season started, would you have picked a road course and a super speedway as the two tracks where Ross would break through and get his first two wins? This goes for both of you.
Super, in my opinion, super speedway, no. Road course, yes. I think you look back at our results from last year, and we were strong at all the road courses, arguably stronger than we were on the oval. So I expected to be strong on the road courses this year. Super speedways, I feel like we have all of the elements to compete, but there's always that that element of luck that you never can count on. But if that answers your question.
All right. Any final questions for Phil before we let him go? All right. We're going to take one final question for Dustin. Go ahead.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Phil, can you kind of talk me through a little bit of the mindset or the strategy in terms of, I know all the cars or Chevys are trying to pit about the same time, but just how that worked, because it seemed like passing was difficult and it was about kind of leapfrogging a little bit on pit road and what you guys were able to do to kind of set things up to put yourselves in, to put Ross in that position at the end.
Yeah, generally speaking, when it comes to the, you know, the manufacturer's strategies, it's a pretty tall order to get that many people organized and communicated appropriately to choose a pit lap or to choose a pit scenario, how many tires, how much fuel. You know, you use more fuel in the front of the pack than you do in the middle of the pack, so trying to accommodate the group that you're going to pit with, you know, communicate all that well and execute is the most difficult element of that. We can look back at history. We can look back at early in this race. When we're in stage three, we look back early in the race and see what happened to try to, you know, identify any elements of that that might be advantageous to incorporate in the strategy in the closing laps.
All right. Phil, congratulations again on that victory, and we appreciate you spending some time with us.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to continue with our Q&A. We're going to move on to the race-winning owner, Justin Marks, who's now joined us here in the Talladega Super Speedway Media Center. Justin, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on that second win. Just take us through those final laps from your spot on the pit box.
Jeez, I wasn't on the pit box. I was in the bus. I was trying to keep my world a little quiet at the end because it just, you know, these things end up being so circumstantial at the end of the races. I mean, what's interesting about this race is, and we talked about this in the bus with about 15 to go, is everybody's kind of in a single file line and we're all kind of cruising, but everybody's just thinking about what they're going to do at the end. And then you see a whole bunch of plans try to be executed at one moment, but they don't all jive with everybody else's plans. So it's just madness. And I really liked where Ross was. I liked that he was just painting the bottom and he was being patient, and just sort of riding with some Chevrolet friends there. And you know, when things got crazy, I just, you know, Ross is in a spot right now where he's making, you know, pretty intelligent decisions. So, I mean, it's just, I'm a fan alongside the other 150,000 people here on the property at the end of the race, just cheering for my guy, and he did a great job.
Awesome. Well, we're going to open up for questions for Justin. If you have one, raise your hand. We'll get a mic to you. We're going to start up front with Bob, and then we'll go to Steven. Go ahead, Bob.
Bob Pockers, Fox
Sports. Bob, how was last night?
That was two nights ago.
Was it two nights ago?
Yeah. You can
we need to party.
Watch our pre-race. You and I. I know you guys love our pre-race shows.
I do.
Ross won this race with patience. Did you think he would win a race with patience?
That's a very, very interesting question. I've said this a number of times, Bob. I mean, you know, Ross has spent a number of years in his career fighting every lap of every race because tomorrow wasn't given, because next week was not guaranteed. And, you know, I've seen and continue to see so much talent in him that my goal was to put him in a position where he didn't have to do that, where, you know, he had some job security and he felt like he could build this team around him. And I told him this year that if he slowed down a little bit for me and just took a deep breath and slowed down 5%, that we can do great things. And I think that's where that comes from, right, is that he's now comfortable in his job and comfortable in his skin and understands and knows this team is being built around him. So he can take a breath and he can be more calculated and not try to get it all right now in this moment. And I think at a place like Talladega, there's equity in that because you have to be really intelligent and cerebral about how you approach the end of these races, and he just did a perfect job today.
And you have two wins. How do you start preparing this team for a significant playoff run, or do you not even start thinking about, man, how deep we can go and how do we get a group that's, I assume, not really been in a playoff situation ready for it?
Yeah, I don't even think we begin to have those conversations. I mean, I think that we're here today, and we were where we were at COTA, and the races leading up to COTA, just because we've got a process that works, and I think that we have to just fundamentally stay committed to that process. I mean, I think when you start talking about playoff strategy and how you're going to mount a run for the championship, I mean, that kind of mental bandwidth is reserved, I think, at this point for the teams that have been there a long time, right? That's something that Gibbs talks about. That's something that Hendrick and Penske talk about. But Trackhouse is so new that we can't start thinking that way. We have to just focus on what we're doing every week, just the execution of what we're doing every week that's putting us in that position. Obviously, we're contending for wins kind of week in and week out. We just have to commit to that. I don't think that there's going to be any conversation about playoff strategy for the foreseeable future.
All right, we'll go to Steven. Go ahead.
Steven Toronto, CBS Sports. Justin, the objective in this sport is to win anywhere you can, but Talladega, there's a certain cultural hold and mystique that this track has, not only in racing, but also in mainstream culture as a whole. Mm-hmm. As you continue to build Trackhouse, what does it do for your team as an organization and also as a brand to have staked your claim to have having won at this racetrack?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's an important question because Talladega is so important in the history of this sport. It's hallowed ground. I mean, we were flying in here 10 o'clock this morning, you know, looking at all the campers and all the people here and going, man, I flew with Tim Duggar, and he says, when I close my eyes and think about America, I picture Talladega Super Speedway on a NASCAR weekend. Like, it's awesome to be able to come here with so much history and how important this place is for Trackhouse, a new team. Obviously, we won at COTA, sort of a new track. To come to hallowed ground like this and win, I mean, I mean, winning at Talladega is incredible. It's incredible.
All right, we're going to go – hang tight, give me a minute here. We got a couple hands up. We're going to come up front to Jeff. I'm going to go upstairs to the press box, then come back downstairs and get Dustin, Jordan, and Daniel. So up front to Jeff Gluck right here, please. Thank you.
I know you're not thinking about how to manage the playoffs yet, but where do you think Ross fits in right now in terms of the title contenders? I mean, there's only got a couple guys with two wins.
Yeah, I mean – things can change really quickly in the sport, right? Like, we have a lot of momentum right now, and everybody's doing a great job bringing fast race cars to the racetrack, but things can change quickly, right? Like, I mean, other teams, other manufacturers, they can find something really quickly, and I mean, you know, we've seen Tony Stewart do what he does through summer stretches and through the playoffs, like you know, resurgence or momentum can sort of come from anywhere at any time. So I'm being honest when I say that playoffs isn't a word that's uttered in our building at all. I mean, because, you know, we still have to go to a lot of tracks with this race car that we've never been to before, and we still have a lot to learn. We're committed to the process of learning this car and figuring out the right approach to this car. So, you know, I'm being totally honest with you. Like, we don't talk about that at all, because it's so new. Everything is just so new. We're just trying to do a good job every day. You know what I mean?
All right, we're going to go upstairs to the press box for the question.
ChrisKnight.com. Justin, congratulations on the win. This morning, Trackhouse Racing announced another new partner for the 2022 season and beyond. I was just curious, how much inventory, if any, do you have left for 2022 available?
Yeah, we don't have anything left in 22, and honestly, we probably don't have anything left in 23. I mean, we've got a lot of momentum right now. What we're doing is resonating with a lot of people. We're authentic. We're real. Obviously, we're winning, which is important. And you know, this is a great sport. I mean, this is a sport where companies can come in and they can build brand awareness. They can just grow their business, and we're just trying to position ourselves as Trackhouse as the most viable place for companies to come and do that. So I take a lot of pride in bringing, you know, two new companies to the sport, not only Worldwide Express but Jockey also, that we announced on Monday, and obviously Tootsie's and all the other stuff we've got going on. So, you know, I think that it's, you know, what we're trying to do here is being successful, because I think, you know, people are, this is a partnership-based business, and the partners are seeing that Trackhouse is a great place to be.
All right, any additional questions in the press box?
No, ma'am.
All right, we're going to come back downstairs. We're going to go to Dustin.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Justin, 2 wins in 10 races. You call yourselves disruptors. That's quite a disruption in the sport. So is that what you expected at the beginning of the season? Since you say you're here to disrupt, yeah. Wasn't that the idea?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, I get that question. I get that question a lot, and my answer to that is, you know, all of us would not have put the work into starting Trackhouse to just be here also, right? To be here and try to contend or try to do this. I mean, we're trying to establish ourselves, Trackhouse, as a company that can contend for championships in the sport for decades to come. And so I think that I would say that the expectation was that we would be here, but it's happened quickly. It's just, obviously, it's happened very, very quickly. But what comes with that, a lot of responsibility comes with that too, because like I said earlier, it's not going to be like this forever, right? I mean, there's going to be a trough that we go through. There's going to be times when, you know, when, and it could happen at any point, right? Other teams are strong, other OEMs are strong, and we have to build a strong foundation so when those headwinds come, we can navigate them, and we're not a flash in the pan, and we're not, oh, remember when Trackhouse showed up and they were good for this period of time. Like, that fundamental work comes in just establishing, you know, what's working right now, which is the fact that we're building a great culture. Everybody that works for Trackhouse loves working for the company. They're excited about this car. They're excited about the opportunity, and that ends up being speed in the race car, I believe, with this new car. So, yeah. No, I had success, right? I mean, my goals in 2022 were not in numbers of wins, points, positions. One car makes the playoffs. It was in continues to be in making sure that every week we get better, and that we invest in each other, and that we learn this race car, and we constantly improve. Those are the goals every week at Trackhouse, right? The wins are nice, the results are nice, but that's the byproduct of the work we put in Monday through Friday. So that's just continues to be where we focus our attention.
All right, we're gonna come up front to Jordan, please.
Jordan Bianchi, The Athletic. Do you think of yourselves as like a model organization for any new ownership groups coming in?
I hope so. I mean, I think that part, an element of what Trackhouse is doing feels a bit of a responsibility to do everything that we can to elevate the sport, right? To amplify the sport, to be good stewards of the sport. And so, like, if we're doing great things out there, and it attracts people to emulate or attracts or inspires new ownership or other teams to do things, then I think that's all good, right? It's like, you know, everybody says, I spent a ton of money making the haulers look good, right? And so people have come up and said, you know, your haulers look awesome, haulers look amazing. But in a way, it doesn't really matter, but it does matter, right? So, like, if everybody comes in and goes, man, your haulers look incredible, if that inspires every other team in the series to get super creative with how they manage their branding and their optics and how they wrap their haulers, how they wrap their pit boxes, how they wrap their toolboxes, like, then it's sort of a rising tide raises all ships. I mean, like, Trackhouse exists fundamentally because we freaking love NASCAR racing. Love it. I love it. And, like, I want to do something in this sport that's great for Trackhouse, but if I can contribute something that inspires all the other teams and new owners and stuff, then great, awesome. Come on.
Your friendship with Kid Rock, how did that come to be, and what's his involvement with the team?
Yeah, he just hangs out because he likes to go to the races. He's just riding our coattails. No, I'm kidding. We have a great partner in Tootsie's, and that partnership is so much more than just a bar on Broadway. I mean, Steve Smith, who owns Tootsie's, owns Kid Rock's, Honky Tonk Central, Rippy's, the Diner. I mean, he's a major hospitality powerhouse in Nashville. So being able to be partnered with somebody like him really brings the Nashville connection to what we're doing. And Bob's, he's a huge supporter and friend of what we're doing. Obviously, him and Steve have that Honky Tonk, Kid Rock's Honky Tonk on Broadway. And it's just part of kind of the power of Trackhouse in that town a little bit. It's like people just love it, want to be a part of it.
All right, we're going to continue with questions. I'm going to go to Daniel in the back, up to Kelly, to Jenna, and then Weaver, and then I'm going to work in a few others. Go ahead, Daniel.
Dylan McFadden, frontstretch.com. I got two questions. First, Chip Ganassi Racing only got two wins in its final two seasons. Since you brought over pretty much a majority of the people who worked under that banner, I know it's a different car, different circumstances. Do you measure in any way, shape, or form what you're doing now compared to what the Ganassi umbrella was able to accomplish in its closing days?
It's easy to do that. I mean, that's pretty low hanging fruit, right? Because in a time of transition, you're trying to measure yourself against what was before. But honestly, I don't really think of it. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Chip Ganassi. I mean, I've raced for him for a number of years. I've been inspired by watching him and his teams race. Things are just so different. I mean, we've kept a lot of people, but it's an entirely new culture. The building looks different. We got this new car, new schedule. So, that doesn't really ever come to mind just because we're just trying to do our business strategy. Our business model is just so different. But to your point, I mean, it's important to recognize, like, Chip Ganassi and Chip Ganassi Racing, they have some ownership in this win and in our win in Austin because – we've got so many people that work for Trackhouse that worked at Chip Ganassi Racing, mm-hmm. and out of that building and everything. Trackhouse just can't compare to Chip Ganassi because what we're doing is just so different.
My second question is, I confirmed with Andy Petrie today that the number 33 Skull car that's sitting at Trackhouse is the one that got the four wins in September back in '91. Yeah. So first off, what drove you to get that car? And why display it at your headquarters?
Like I said, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the sport. I want to be a steward of the sport's history and the sport's future. I've got, I'm fortunate enough in my house to have a Tim Richmond Blue Max Racing suit hanging on my wall. Liz Allison gave me one of Davey's suits from '93 that I've got in the house. And, if Trackhouse can make investments to help preserve the history of the sport, that's kind of what we do, is we want to honor the history of the sport. And, Mr. September, I mean, Harry Gantt won all those races in that car for Andy Petrie, and when Andy and I were talking about it, I said, if you ever want to sell that car, we'll buy it, and it's the car, and it's sitting right there, and I want NASCAR to I'm going to ask NASCAR if they'll let me take a couple laps in it at Darlington on throwback weekend. I haven't asked that question yet, but I guess I'm asking it now.
We'll make sure it gets to the right spot.
Thank you.
All right. Daniel Kelly. That's where I was going.
Kelly Crandall, racer.com. Justin, you've been preaching, as you have in here, about balancing, building the culture, and you know other teams are coming and building. But how do you balance, though, allowing your organization to enjoy and celebrate these successes and what you guys are building, but not getting, as you keep talking about, too high because you know other teams are coming?
Yeah, I mean, I think celebrate it quick and get over it quick, right? I mean, it's after we won COTA, I told Ross, we were doing a bunch of media in the shop like Tuesday afternoon. I was like, I'm over Texas. Like I'm all Richmond right now. And just like we're all going to be, what's next, Dover? We're all going to be Dover? Yeah, we're all going to be Dover this week, right? So I think it's what I've said about the fact that we're super, super committed to just the day in and day out process, our model of doing the work. And that's proven to be successful. And it's a challenge. I mean, managing success is every bit as difficult as managing failure. He did a good job today, too. There comes a lot of responsibility with success, and that means committing fundamentally to what got you there and the process of getting there, and not expecting to be the team every week, but just basically us waking up and going to the shop on Monday morning and going, we could suck this weekend at Dover. Both cars could suck, right? So it's like it's the competition is out there ready to crush you every single week, and that's just kind of how we think. Yeah, yeah, for sure. And that just comes with how we support each other and how we manage the narrative in the shop of just going like we're doing something special here. But it's an exercise in managing expectations too, because we have a lot of experience at Trackhouse. We're a new team. But we have a lot of experience. I mean, the cumulative experience of people that work for this team is hundreds of years in this sport. And so we have a lot of people in the company that would say, like, hey, you know, we've been on this ride before, too. Like, we've been on this ride. We've won races and then just gotten crushed for a while. So, I mean, we're just all kind of doing a good job of how we manage the highs and the lows. I don't think we get that low, and we just don't get that high. Like, today is fun, but you know, this week we'll be focused on Dover and you know that that's an entirely different challenge again.
All right, I'm going to quickly wrap with Justin before we start with Ross. I'm going to go to Jenna and then end with Matt.
I can hear you, Jenna.
Missed another win, huh?
You know, when Armando said I'm going to be at every race, that was an expression of passion, not scheduling. That was, right? So he's, look, I mean, it's Pitbull, right? I mean, he's touring, he's recording songs, he's releasing a song in 2 weeks, and they're doing a bunch of press around that, and I promise you that I will again call him this week and give him a bunch of shit for missing a race because he needs to be in victory lane with us.
Has anyone heard from him? He knows you guys won?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're on the phone with him in victory lane again. Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah.
And I wanted to get an update on your plans for Nashville. I mean, now that you're in the Ganassi shop and you're changing things, where does Nashville stand?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll. So the idea very, very early on was to try to build a race team based out of Nashville, and that was the strategy when we were just shopping for a charter, and then shopping for a charter became an acquisition of Chip Ganassi Racing, which changed from building a company in Nashville to uprooting a company and moving it to Nashville, which no longer really was viable, especially the relationship we have with Chevrolet and the tech center that they're building in Concord. So, you know, the way I'll answer that is Trackhouse is more than a racing team. It's a brand where we're trying to inspire. We're trying to activate in the intersection point between entertainment and motorsports. It is still very much, we talked about it today, we have a number of conversations. It's still very much in the business development strategy to have a brick and mortar presence in Nashville. It's a matter of figuring out how that looks with our goals scaling as a race team. So a lot of it's up in the air, but Nashville is so important to us, and I think that we've got some momentum in getting something special going there.
All right, and I'm going to end for Justin with Matt. If I can get a microphone to Matt. Thank you.
You feel good? Racing America, one for Justin and then to Ross. How vital and how important has Ty been to just the infrastructure and the organization? Obviously, his resume suggests he's done this before, he's been here before, but how important has he been?
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, Ty was the first person that I called when I really needed to have a meaningful discussion about what my ideas for this vision was, because I needed to bounce it off of somebody that's seen the highs, the lows, people come and go, the whole thing. I mean, how many times have we seen this sport? Somebody comes in, they're going to be the next great thing, and it just ends up, you know, not working out, right? And so I was business partners with Harry Scott for 4 years, right? And so, like, you know, when I called Ty, I said, look, I've got this idea, and it revolves around this new car. I was like, but I need like a real bullshit meter. Like, I need somebody to tell me this is a bad idea. And Ty saw it. Like, he saw it really, really quickly. And he's been instrumental because he knows so much about how this garage works, about how this business works. And he continues to contribute so much to this company because he just has such a such a great understanding of how the sport works. But he's also at a point in his life where, you know, he's not getting any younger. He's about to be 57, and he sees Trackhouse as his swan song in the sport. And he worked for Dale Earnhardt, and he worked for, you know, MWR and Toyota. And I think that he gets really excited about this Trackhouse project really challenging him and everything that he's done in his life, and that final kind of thing in his career that he really makes an impact in this sport. And he's a soldier, and he's super loyal. And the guy works way harder than I ask him to work, so he's super, super vital to us.
He said just now that everyone's brought up the glory days to him this weekend with Jeffrey and the three car and the memories there. And he says, like, right now, the way things are going, these are the glory days. And he's going to look back on it like that.
Yeah, well, I love hearing that. I mean, because I want everybody that works for this company to feel like they've got a great job and feel like they're doing important work.
And then for Ross, and actually both of you here too, we talked in L.A. about when you were first brought on board and overriding the underdog mentality. And you said that Justin said, you're no longer the underdog. You're now a contender. You're here. Could you kind of provide me, both of you, insight into that conversation and how important that was into getting into a championship mindset this early into the year?
I'm going to answer that first, and then I'm going to let you have the stage because I'm going back to Nashville. You can go with me. Yeah. You got to talk quick, though. You can't do those long answers. No, I know. That's why I'm going to leave and give him the stage. Matt, I don't even remember what your question was. Yes, thank you. So Ross, I met Ross 10 or 11 years ago. I'm a huge, huge fan of his talent. What I told him when the Ganassi acquisition happened and then when I offered him the job was that, you know, Trackhouse sees an opportunity, that my goal for Trackhouse and what Trackhouse is doing is an opportunity to be great in this sport, and you are a championship driver. And I've seen the whole time I've watched him race and raced against him and watched him come up that this is a championship contending talent at the NASCAR Cup Series level, period. And that this new car represents an opportunity for us to make a statement quickly, to where if we came in with the Gen 6 car, the Gen 5 car, we're going, well, we're up against teams that have so much engineering depth and money and all stuff, but now we sort of have, we're all kind of playing with the same ball. So I say, like, if we can build a team around this ball and give you control of it, we can really, really do great things. So it's like, we're not an underdog in the sense that, like, I feel like we can go on any weekend, we can go and win. But I've got so much respect for these organizations that race in the series. I mean, we can't come in here and be like, yeah, we're better than Hendrick or Baron Gibbs, like, whatever. I mean, like I said it earlier, any one of these teams have so much talent and engineering depth that at any point they could find momentum and we could get knocked back a little bit and have to find our way out. But I do believe that Trackhouse is here to stay, that we've arrived, and that what we're doing is we are investing a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of resources into establishing ourselves as a championship contending team for decades to come.
All right, and with that, Justin, you are clear.
Huh? That was the short answer. Now you guys get the long one. Thanks, everybody.
No, I think he's leaving me. All right, real quick, Ross, before you answer Matt's question, just for audio purposes, we have now been joined by our race winner here at Talladega Super Speedway, the Geico 500, with Ross Chastain. Ross, go ahead with your answer, please.
It's not working. Now is it working?
It's working now.
So for me, it's his confidence in the way he answers that is the whole reason that we're not underdogs, and it starts at the top. So I could go into a long spiel about it, but it truly just starts with when he answers that question. That's the reason why, and that's the reason why we believe it. I would be lying if I told you I remembered exactly what he said. So, well, whatever he said, that's what he said.
All right. If I could get our microphone to Jordan, please. Front.
Jordan Bianchi, The Athletic. Your dad was not at COTA. I think that's the first win he said that he's ever missed, but he was here today. What was it like celebrating with him?
Yeah, it was awesome. That's, I realized it immediately at COTA that he wasn't there, so... Yeah, that's special. He comes to a lot. He puts a lot of effort into being here. My mom does. My brother does. My family. They make the effort to drive, fly, whatever it takes. And it means the world. Like, he is the reason that I'm here. He is the reason I fell in love with racing and why I stayed out of, you know, I won't say trouble, but, like, he's – got me in, like, it just gave me an avenue to be successful and to truly, and I fell in love with it. So, you know, he didn't push me early on. I mean, he did, but it wasn't like other kids we were racing against. And it just, I think the way he did it was the perfect way. We had fun racing locally and we got to this level, and then we did a few races and we kept doing more. But beyond all that, back to the question, it's just my dad was here. We won a cup race. That's so cool.
A year ago, you know, a lot of things were uncertain about your future in the Cup Series. Now you drive for a team co-owned by Pitbull. You're celebrating a victory lane with Kid Rock. You won at Talladega. Does it just seem surreal at times?
It does not seem real at all. Like, I keep waiting to wake up from this dream and realize it's all not what I thought, what I think I'm living. But I've got great groups of people from Trackhouse on the competition and the business side to the business side with Spire, my family, people in Charlotte and around Mooresville that keep reminding me and keep showing me that this is real. And we talked about it. I talked about it earlier, and we're sitting right here in this spot. Like, this is, I'm right where I want to be, and I have the people around me. So they keep me remembering, and they keep reminding me, and they keep pushing me to make this the best we can make it. You know, we're not resting on any of this stuff. And like Justin said, I might not be quite as sharp in the morning to get to work on Dover, but I'll get to work on it at some point tomorrow.
All right, Jeff, did you have a question?
When you brought out the watermelon, it got quite a pop from the crowd. Like, kind of, it used to be like the, right before Carl did his backflip, like, they knew it was coming. What was it like to stand on top of your car with the melon, Talladega grandstands, they're, like, going crazy? What was that like?
Unlike anything I've ever experienced, Jeff. Roy brought it out. Mr. Roy gets it every week for us, and it was a long way down there for him, and it's like I like to remind him, at his age, that's no small feat. But no, I knew I wanted to stand on the car. I wanted to, like, I want it to smash. I don't want it to just bust open. So, yeah, my Bell helmet, I'm running ear cuffs, like noise-canceling ear cuffs and really good ear molds. And I heard them, and I felt them. And, like, the car was shaking, and then my legs started shaking, and then my arms were shaking. And I was like, I took a second and I just scanned left to right. So, like, from the start finish line was in my peripheral, and I scanned down to the trioval, and people were going crazy. It was wild. Smashed it, and then they erupted again. So, yeah, it's indescribable. Like, I don't have the words, but just the feeling they pumped into, like, that I got was what you dream of. Like, that's what I wanted to do when I first wanted to show watermelons. If I was ever able to win a race, I wanted that feeling and I wanted that reaction, and we've got that.
All right, a mic to Bob, please.
Right across the table.
Bob Pockers, Fox Sports. I know the first one is the biggest, but is to win a race like this with patience more important?
It is now, because it was a mental decision I made with whenever I got in line there on the bottom pushing Larson. I had JJ behind me, and I made the mistake several times in Xfinity cars and had like track position on him in equal cars, and I moved up or I made a move and then he went on to win the race. So I knew he would stay on the bottom. Like, he's won so many races that way, and if he pushed me and I pushed the five, we'd have the best shot. Just make the bottom the best it can be. So it's not that I was just complacent or anything. It was, I thought my best chance of winning was to just push the bottom. Now, that was wrong, because the outside, the 43, still cleared all of us. But it's still, I thought it was going to put me in the best position to win. So yeah, the patience side, it's hard. It's so hard to just, every split second decision has to be quick, but then also you have to be able to live with the consequences of it. So I just thought that was my best maneuver, which is, I've never thought that before. And it's not like, oh, I should have always done that in the past. It worked out this time. No, he went up to pass the 43. That's how I remember it. What? I was never going up. I mean, I might have, like, I mean, it's a blur. Like, coming to the finish and Kurt's on my right rear. I'm trying to keep whoever, like, I don't even know if there's anybody still behind me, but just no matter where the car went, the mental decision was not to go to his right rear because I had somebody on my outside. So that's cool that he thought I did it, though. Let's let him think that.
Okay, we're going to go Jenna, Daniel, Taryn, Courtney, and up to Dustin. So Jenna, go ahead.
I have really important questions. How old is this watermelon? Was this watermelon?
It got purchased right after CODA, so it's been a few weeks. It was on its last leg.
Last leg. So how does last leg watermelon off the pavement after 800 miles taste?
Never sweeter. Oh my goodness. And I could feel like it was so much watermelon juice on my face and running down me. And I looked down at it and there was no seeds. And I was like, well, they're either all on my face and Regan's not saying anything again. And then I called him out on it. Like, are you going to tell me this time? Like, help a brother out. Just knowing what that means, and not to get too long winded, but to go back to our family's history and what has put food on our table for generations. And to get to do that in front of, let alone this crowd, but national, worldwide attention, is just all I have ever wanted to do as a race car driver, is to help promote watermelons.
And that was my next question, is have watermelons ever gotten this much exposure and, this platform that you're, are you noticing it? Are you noticing the attention on watermelons?
I mean, I am. I've noticed attention on watermelon forever. I mean, I work with different state associations and the National Watermelon Association. There's a National Watermelon Promotion Board. We incorporate it into safe driving campaigns. We incorporate it into paint schemes whenever we can. So I've always had, obviously, the attention to it. I still have Google alerts set for watermelon race truck, watermelon driver, watermelon race car driver, like to an old email address that I'll check every now and then. Because used to, that's how I could I'd send off a story to the board or to the association to show them what we were doing. So, I don't know. That might be a question for somebody a little bit older than me. That might know if watermelons have ever gotten this much attention, but I'm gonna guess not. I mean Gallagher, right? But.
All right, Daniel, go ahead with your question, please.
Dylan McFadden, front stretch. When Justin was in here, you know, he talked about how Talladega is hallowed ground in NASCAR and in its history. I'm just curious, for you, as you've been coming up to the sport, where was Talladega's place in your mind when it came to tracks and where you would want to win?
It is. I mean, you just, I think it was said today, like, you know, they don't race them anywhere else like they race them at Talladega, and I think that Barney Hall said that. So, I think, that's just, we've all been watching races here forever, and I mean, I come here with the mentality. I used to come here really worried, really try to focus my first couple years and try to like plan out every move, and I realized pretty quickly that's not possible. And Johnny Sauter said one time, like, "Why are you worried? You're going to be backwards in the grass at 200 miles an hour. If you don't hit anything, you'll probably still have a chance to win. Like, relax." And he just said it in passing. Maybe I don't even know if it was like driver intros or after the race or something. And it stuck with me. And I was like, you know what? He's right. Like, I should come here a lot more relaxed and learn and try to prepare. And I prepare and I try to be, as you know, the best race car driver I can be. But I'm no better because we won. And the other 25, there was 25 cars today that could legitimately win this race. I mean, in theory, there was 39, but 25 legitimate chances. And, you know, we were just the lucky ones that the cars parted and they all hung a right coming through the tri-oval. And that was it.
All right, Taryn, go ahead.
Taryn Walk with NASCAR.com. The same car as Coda. Does that make this more special?
It makes it so special that Jim France and the NASCAR family and the France family, like, their vision for this car, that you can win a race on a road course. And I mean, how many, is it a month? Has it been a month or 2 months? Since Coda? A month? Fourth race. In a month, you can bring a car back you win at a road course and you can win at Talladega. Like, that hasn't happened since the 60s. Like, I don't know, farther back. I have no idea. I mean, they would have different cars. So it's wild. That's more what it means to me, that this car is capable of that. You change the geometry, you change the suspension, shim the body a little bit, and go race. Like, put the different tune in the motor for a super speedway, and adjust your rear diffuser and all your – adjust everything, and the same car can come race. That's just wild. I'm not – sitting here going to say it's any cheaper yet. I don't think it's cheaper for us than just building a new car like in the past, but I don't know. I don't know the business behind what we're doing. I just drive the car. So it is special, though.
Do you believe it's a lucky car, or are you not superstitious?
I'm not. I mean, I like that we still have my first ever race truck, my Monte Carlo race car back home. We have my brother's first car. Like, that kind of stuff is neat, and I will never probably get rid of those. But, you know, here, you honestly can't tell. And the first time that ever happened for me, you can always tell something between each car. There's always a little something different. And I wrecked in the duel last year in the 42 car, wrecked the car. We went to a backup, and I got in for practice the next day. And I called them out. I was like, there's no way. This is the same car, same interior. And they're like, no, it's all new, but it's all that good, and it's that well prepared. They prepare it that close that you can't tell a difference. And it's the same thing with these cars. I can't tell a difference week in and week out. You know, I can't tell that it's the same car because I can't tell that one's any different.
All right, Courtney, go ahead with your question.
Courtney Horn, ScarsandScuffs.com. Your first Cup victories have come at two distinct tracks. When you think about your NASCAR journey, is that mind-blowing for you?
Absolutely mind-blowing. It is. I grew up short track racing, so I just assumed and thought that was where I was the best, and road course, like, turning right was hard and drafting was hard, and I just thought I would never be able to catch up to guys that had been doing it so much longer than me, and a lot of time and work and really good people surrounding me. We've closed the gap. There's still a long ways to go, but yeah, it's absolutely mind-blowing.
Rank among your victories?
Oh, I don't put any of them ahead of any other one. They're all, you know, this one and Coda, and I mean, yeah, it's Cup. It's different, but I mean, I put it right next to the Iowa truck win.
All right, we're going to go to Destin front, and then Nathan, and then we will end with Daniel.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Ross, Justin has talked about this team being a disruptor and doing things in a different way. And I'm curious, one, how has he impacted you and how has he impacted this team, especially when he's more based in Nashville, so he's not in the shop as much? How is that disruptor, how does that attitude or how does that motivation, how has he had an impact on you and this team to do what this organization has done in the first 10 races of the season?
I'd say as much as on the business and public side that he's a disruptor, his messaging to me is, like, I don't have to be a disruptor anymore. Like, on track, it's okay. I can take a breath. I don't have to drive every lap. So I would say I was a disruptor through trucks, Xfinity, early on in Cup last year. And it took several different people that I have a lot of respect for, and some that at the time I didn't really know why they were telling me these things, because I didn't know them that well. But then Justin, like, this year, like, it's okay. Stop. Just stop. Like, you're okay. Just go drive the car, but you don't have to win every lap. Like, win the day, be as good as we can in that day. As far as everything else, yeah, Trackhouse is maybe a disruptor, if you know, in that sense. But for me on track, it's almost been the opposite.
Okay, we're going to go to Nathan and then end with Daniel. Go ahead, Nathan.
Hey, Ross. Nathan Buckley with Full Sail University. I noticed that they showed on the big board, probably with about five laps go maybe, that the different winners throughout the year, and most of them, maybe all but Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch, were younger drivers that I imagine that you raced against in the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series. Coming into the Cup Series here and seeing all these drivers that you raced with doing well, does that motivate you at all to go out there and, you know, race your rear end off, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I don't look at any car other, you know, anything farther than how do I pass them or how, you know, how do I race them. I think there are more of us that are in our 20s, 20 year old range, but I don't really I see what everybody's talking about, and I do see the trend, but those guys are good. Like, they've forgotten more than I've ever learned, and that's been the hardest part about Cup, is trying to catch up to that. They just even though it's a different car and totally different environment on track, with everything about this new car, it's still, they're that good that they will adapt. And trying to come as prepared as I can be every week, you know, I look to those guys, and I'm studying them to try to be the best race car driver I can be. So I think they're the best.
All right, and I skipped over Jonathan by accident, so go ahead with your question, Jonathan, before we'll wrap with Daniel.
He'll turn you on.
There you go. Ross, I just have to ask, you know, did you get a chance to talk with Pitbull at all?
I haven't. That's twice in a row in Victory Lane. I'm running around hugging, jumping on people that Justin, and they're off in the side where they can actually hear him. But I'll have a text from him. We text every, you know, throughout every so often, and you know, he's always motivating and like, he wants to be here. He does. And we're going to catch up down in South Florida, because we're not that – our homes aren't from that far apart. Couldn't probably be farther, you know, environment and socially a farther distance in the world. But, it's we have the same, you know, the same passion for this right now. So, he's – Mr. Worldwide. Like, the thought that he's going to be here, like Justin said, every week is a dream. But he'll be here, and you know, he's going to be here for one of these wins. And you know, I think rolling off today, Daniel, I thought he had one of the fastest cars, and honestly, the wreck that took them out coming to the restart, I shut the car off to try to keep, I'm keeping it cool and saving gas, and coming to the restart zone, I popped the clutch and the ignition was off. And so I was lagged back, and I took off and was wide open way before the restart zone, but I didn't actually catch up. And that's when Joey got turned in turn one, and they all wrecked, and I was barely able to slow down enough. So, I mean, I think, you know, I would have been in that wreck with Daniel, but if I not for that mistake. But I feel like Daniel, you know, I truly believe, I see the preparation, the 1-99, like, he's going to win races. And when he does, he's gonna rattle them off. Like, he's that level and that caliber driver. And that team and the 1-99 are building together. But yeah, I haven't got to talk to Armando yet.
A lot of special things about today's win. How would you sum up what you're going to remember years from now about this?
I mean, I'm going to remember that I crossed the line, and I honestly didn't know if we won. I mean, I knew that I quit blocking, I think, the three finish second. Like, I saw the five and the 43 hanging right, and then I was just motoring on the bottom, and Brandon said, go to the top, and I'm like, well, that's weird. Like, the three's going to push me. And I mean, I knew I was coming to the checkered, but then I crossed the line, and they all were slowing down, and I was like, did we win? Like, we won? I mean, I knew that and I was like, they're not – everybody's slowing down, and I was like, we won the race. Like, that's wild. So, I mean, that's the first thing. And then, you know, for the first time ever, I blew the rear tires off of it doing burnouts. I felt them unraveling, and I didn't care. I had it in second gear, wide open, and I'll take the hit on that. Like, whatever we got to do to get it, you know, to fix it. But in the moment, I couldn't control myself. Yep.
All right, Daniel, go ahead and bring us home.
Two-part question. How did you feel about your chances once you got the speed? How were you feeling at that point?
Terrible. Yeah, I just cost us the race, I thought. Absolutely. I didn't think there was any way. You know, I mean, I knew there was a way to get back in it, but then, honestly, I knew it would be hard. It was just track position, man. Just getting, like, we had cycled out to be fifth, and then the whole rest of the race, I think I had to watch the 43. I had to watch Eric up there dicing it up, and if nothing else, learning how to race with the leaders. And I'm back in – I'm 12th in line bottom. I'm 13th in line on the top. Like, I'm just stuck. Tried the very top a couple times, tried to work with a few guys, hung guys out, got hung out, and, you know, just it took Phil Surgeon and some strategy to get up there and then one key move. But, yeah, when we had the speeding penalty, no, I mean, yeah, I didn't get down. It's just like, well – it just made it a whole lot harder because we had just jumped so many guys that come out fifth. So.
When you got last by the field and they kind of like split you at the last second. What happened right there? What was communicated to you about where the field was?
Yeah, it was the field was counted down. Brandon counted them down side by side. Leaders, the whole pack, two by two. McDowell had slowed down when I had to do my pass through. I don't know why he was that far back, but he slowed down on the track so we could draft together. And that prolonged us going a lap down by a few laps. And I knew that I had to race him for the free pass, and Brad was in the pack at the tail. And off of two, I started dragging back to get gapped off of Michael, get a little momentum to him. And then into three, I mean, it's a decision I made on my own. But I offset to the right of Michael, so he was on the bottom, and I went to the right, and I'm about a car length or a little bit less back. And I knew that put everybody either going two by two above me, which then I would probably have to give it to him. But when I saw the five split to the bottom, I disrupted the field, and that was my goal, was create turbulence where that I can catch up, and they don't put me all the way to the back. And it's not – I mean, I thought about it for a few laps, and it's not something that I would do every time, but in that situation, I felt the risk of what I was doing was enough to stay on, to get the free pass at the stage break, to get around the 34 and stay ahead of Brad. That risk was enough, and turns out it probably wasn't, probably. They both got their laps back through a couple cautions later, but I knew that to get the first free pass at stage one end, it was going to take, like, I had to disrupt the field. If not, they would blow by me, and Michael, me, and Brad would all be at the back of the line, and then it, we'd be stuck, and if I was behind one of them, I'd never pass them. So, yeah, it's – I'm sure Kyle wasn't super happy with me. I think it might have cost him the lead, but I felt like it was a risk worth taking, and it was on purpose, so.
All right, Ross, congratulations again.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, and we wish